Hi, this is Alan Chartok on the Congressional Corner with Richie Neal. Every once in a while in politics, you make a friend. You have somebody you really respect. And Richie Neal is at the top of my respect list, congressman from my district, Massachusetts 1st District. And Richie, there's so much to ask you about. But one of the things that many of us in New York State or in Massachusetts, where we live, got upset about was the fate of the state and local tax deduction cap that was part of the GOP tax overhaul in 2022. In other words, we couldn't deduct our state and local taxes from our income tax. What's changed?
Well, it's a complicated question, as is frequently the case with tax matters. So the Republicans, with their tax plan in December of 2017, they capped the state and local tax deduction at $10,000. So for many in the blue states, including New York and New Jersey, parts of Massachusetts and parts of California, for example, all of a sudden, by not having that deduction, their tax exposure went up considerably. Mm-hmm. And the challenge that we have now is that because Senator Sinema is against raising the top individual rate from 37.5 to 39.6, it appears to give a boost to people in high-income brackets. So what we did in our recent tax bill, we capped it at $70,000 rather than $10,000. And what Chuck Schumer decides to do in the Senate remains to be seen. Here's the dilemma. I understand the criticism of this, but I also would point out that if you were from New Jersey or New York or parts of Massachusetts or parts of California, you send more money to the federal government than the rest of the country. These are high-tax jurisdictions, but not high-tax jurisdictions because people just want them to be high-tax jurisdictions. In many of those states, we rely quite heavily upon property taxes to finance a lot of basic issues at the local level and the state level. So there's a ways to go on this, but the SALT deduction is complicated on the surface, and it's also complicated in terms of substance.
Just so everybody understands what's going on here, in the old days, we used to be able to deduct our state and local taxes from our federal taxes, right? And then along comes Trump, and that is removed probably to be punitive to the blue states.
There's no question. It was done to be punitive. And they capped it at $10,000, so that was a substantial reversal of what heretofore had been tax policy.
So if you're living in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and you're paying, you know, thousands of dollars in taxes, then no more deduction. You're in trouble. So when will this take effect?
It would take effect when the Senate sends back our version of Build Back Better. And once that happens, then we will come to an agreement on what the ceiling will be on the state and local tax deduction. Schumer said that he would like to have it done before Christmas. I'm a bit more skeptical. I think it might fall into next year. But I also think we're better off doing it right. And if that means that it falls into next year, it wouldn't return probably unless there was a grandfather clause built in for the following year for tax purposes.
Richie Neal's Patrick Leahy, a great hero in the state of Vermont, is retiring. So now what are your thoughts about his contribution? And would our friend Representative Peter Welch, who is quite frequently on this very program, what kind of senator would he make?
Well, first of all, I think with Pat Leahy, something needs to be said that everybody believes, Republican, Democrat, in Congress and in the state of Vermont for sure, and that is that he starts just by being a decent human being. And by the way, that's where it all starts. And I think that Pat Leahy's knowledge and his advocacy over all of these years has really been terrific. And, you know, Peter Welch is from Springfield. I don't know if he advertises that or not. I frequently joke that he had to move to Vermont because he couldn't get elected to Congress from here. And he's really he's a terrific guy.
He is. He's a wonderful guy.
He's thoughtful. He's smart. And he also has something that is hard to measure in public life, but it is crucial, and that is temperament. He knows how to advance the argument and when to pause and then how to advance the argument again. He's just a very good guy, and I've known the whole family here in Springfield my whole life. He comes from a terrific, terrific family.
Okay, so let's do some more politics. Charlie Baker, the governor of Massachusetts, a Republican in blue state, Massachusetts. Who runs against them, and who you got?
Well, my own hunch is with Governor Baker, he's wise to keep his cards close to the vest, because as long as he can postpone the decision, he won't be asked questions by reporters and others about policy as it relates to politics. So I think for him to go into the new year with people still guessing curtails the ability of some challengers. But not to miss the point that there's a battle going on in the Republican Party, as you know, between the base of the Republican Party, which is, I think, far more conservative than the voters of Massachusetts are. And in that 495 beltway, which I have represented in the past for two decades into places like Norfolk County and Bellingham and much of Worcester County all the way out to Milford and places like that. Once you get to that 495 beltway, Governor Baker's extraordinarily popular. And that's because those communities are loaded with suburban voters who are independents. And they tend to be socially fairly liberal, but fiscally fairly conservative. And they've arrived here to go to work at those high-tech companies by the tens of thousands. I don't mean by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. I saw how those suburbs of Franklin and Bellingham and places like that, Uxbridge, grew over just my tenure representing those communities. And the result has been that they would see nothing inconsistent, as they did in the past, by voting for Ted Kennedy and Bill Weld on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that Baker is more of an independent than anything else, and I think that there's, in Massachusetts, there's an avenue for that.
You know, we're going to have reapportionment in Massachusetts. Obviously, you're going to pick up some new cities and towns. What do you expect to happen? Will you be endangered in any way?
I'm delighted with what the legislature did. I think that Jim McGovern and I only had one interest, and that was two seats in western and central Massachusetts.
Right.
So Jim moves more to the west, to ensuring that for 10 years that there'll be more of a presence. And I move on the Connecticut border more to the east for communities that I represented for a long time in the past. And the primary overriding consideration here was to keep two seats in the western part of the state.
Leading me to a question with 1 minute and 20 seconds left. Are you friends with Jim McGovern?
Oh, yeah, very much so. We talk all of the time, and we recently kicked off a food insecurity walk here. And I've known Jim for a long time. I knew him when he worked for Joe Moakley. He is a very good person.
I couldn't agree with that more. And Western Massachusetts has two incredible, powerful, I mean, I know that may be a word that turns you off, but, you know, head of Ways and Means and head of the Rules Committee in our little corner of Western Massachusetts is really incredible. Anyway, we're out of time. Hey, listen, Richie Neal, keep doing what you're doing, and we're all very proud of you. Thank you so much for being
here. Thanks, Alan. You're great. Bye-bye.